This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Area Papers, dated March 18, 2016. I'm going to start today's reading with the Decatur Tribune. Paul Osborne, City Beat. Community searches for real reason majority of school board doesn't want to extend Superintendent Taylor's contract. A vote on Decatur Superintendent of Schools Lisa Taylor's contract extension was scheduled for Tuesday evening by the District No. 61 Board of Education. But after 3.5 hours of discussion about the roll call item on the agenda, the decision was tabled as the two sides on the issue decided to meet in executive session to discuss the matter further. Board President Sherry Perkins was the lone vote against tabling the decision. Perkins is one of the four members not in favor of extending Taylor's contract. Since the board had unofficially split 4-3 in favor of not extending Taylor's contract, it seems that her contract would not be renewed Tuesday because both sides of this community controversy have displayed no signs of changing their mind, their vote. However, Taylor and the public will have to wait at least another month before the board will officially vote yes or no to Taylor's future in District 61. Leading up to the meeting, last week a disciplinary letter from Decatur School Board President Sherry Perkins to Taylor was leaked from Taylor's personnel file and ended up on a Facebook page and in the torch of the African American Voice, a local monthly newspaper. The letter once again created controversy and ignited passions over the recent unofficial decision by a majority of the school board to not extend Taylor's contract when it expires next year. The board decision resulted in a huge response from teachers, students, parents, and the community in general, urging the board to reconsider that unofficial decision and keep Taylor. While three of the board members who want to retain Taylor have been very vocal about their feelings, leading up to last night's school board meeting, none of the four majority vote members have spoken publicly about their reasons for wanting Taylor gone. If the leaked letter was meant to explain the board's actions against Taylor, it failed miserably. It made it appear the board was trying to find a way to justify not to renew Taylor's contract when it came time to do it. A copy of the disciplinary letter was sent to me. Contents of the leaked letter. In the letter to Taylor, which was dated January 4, 2016, School Board President Sherry Perkins stated, "The Decatur Public School District No. 61 2015 audit identified a number of irregularities pertaining to your compliance with district policy rules and regulations regarding the use of P cards and the submission of expense accounts. School officials met with you on November 11, 2015 to obtain your explanations for the irregularities identified by the auditors. As a result of that meeting and information provided by the auditors, school officials have concluded that four transactions in September 2014 and in April and May 2015, totaling $177.34, were clearly inappropriate. You are directed to reimburse the district for that sum, which reflects pizza deliveries on September 25, 2014 and April 16, 2015, and phone case purchases on April 11 and May 24, 2015. The itemized list of inappropriate charges was shared with you at the November 11 meeting. Can be provided if you would like to see a list of the charges again. There were a number of other transactions in which you were involved, called out by the auditors, but the school officials lacked sufficient information regarding the propriety of those charges to require reimbursement. In the future, you are directed to comply in every detail with all relevant school district policies, rules, and regulations regarding work-related expenditure of funds, including, but not limited to, submitting work-related expenses. Should you fail to comply with these directives, there will be further disciplinary consequences. Should you have questions about any aspect or detail included in this letter, you should make inquiry to Sherry Perkins, Board President, Keel Building, 101 West Cerro Gordo, Decatur. A copy of this letter will be placed in your personnel file. The letter is signed by Sherry Perkins. Taylor complied with the directive and repaid the $177.34. No problem. I don't see anything inappropriate about the board's actions and the disciplinary record going into Taylor's personnel file, and apparently none of the board members had a problem with it either. I don't believe for a second that Taylor intentionally tried to defraud the school district. The only part of the letter that I disagree with is informing Taylor that there were other audit findings that she was a part of, but they had no proof of any impropriety on her part. If you don't have any evidence, then the accusation shouldn't be made. Otherwise, I think the letter was appropriate and served as a warning to don't let this happen again. Should you fail to comply with these directives, there will be further disciplinary consequences. It could be that the four board members who have indicated their disapproval with Taylor believe the auditor's report that she was responsible for other misuses of her P-card, even though there isn't any evidence to confirm the belief, at least none the other board members have seen. What happened? A short time after the disciplinary letter was put in Taylor's file, Perkins told Taylor that four members of the board would not vote to extend her contract, a tactful way to say, start looking for another job. So what happened? Did Taylor do something else that caused a problem for a majority of the board members? If she did, the other three board members who feel Taylor is doing a great job apparently didn't know about it. Of course, the board has also been under fire for holding closed meetings without proper notification that such meetings were going to be held and making unofficial decisions behind closed doors. The leak of Perkins' letter to Taylor could result in a lawsuit if Taylor decides to file one later on. An employee's personnel record cannot be obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, which shows how private it is to be kept. There is an extremely limited number of people who have access to Taylor's personnel file, so if any legal action is taken in the future, the name of the person who leaked the letter is bound to be exposed, and perhaps we will know more about the motivation to get rid of Taylor. Doesn't make any sense. I'm certainly not expressing my opinion in this column to belittle any of the members of the Board of Education, but like anybody else in the community, getting rid of Superintendent Taylor, who is one of the most well-liked people in the city and who met all of the goals set for her by the board, just doesn't make any sense. And the letter that was leaked doesn't add any rationale to the decision. The four board members who want Taylor gone are not stupid people, and that is why it is even more confusing as to why an unofficial decision was made that challenges their credibility. I can understand that, because Taylor's personnel record is private. Why the public may not know everything that has gone on to cause four board members to indicate they want Taylor gone, but shouldn't the other three board members who support Taylor be made aware of the deeper reasons the public doesn't see for their attitude against her? In news to know, Decatur Family YMCA to host McIlroy Memorial Golf Outing. The Decatur Family YMCA will host the inaugural McIlroy Memorial Golf Outing presented by Skeff Distributing on Friday, July 22nd at Red Tail Run Golf Course in Decatur. The McIlroy Memorial Golf Outing honors the legacy of Mayor Mike McIlroy, paying tribute to a man who worked tirelessly to improve life throughout Macon County. Event proceeds benefit the Y's annual campaign, ensuring all children and families, regardless of background or income, have a chance to benefit from the YMCA's life-changing programs and services, such as swim lessons, summer camp, Live Strong at the YMCA for cancer survivors, licensed daycare, preschool and after-school programs. The format for the McIlroy Memorial is a four-player scramble with both a morning and afternoon flight, a Toast to Tuna evening ceremony sponsored by Miles Chevrolet and J.L. Hubbard Insurance and Bonds will be held immediately following the afternoon flight. Registration fees are $125 per golfer and $500 per foursome, which includes lunch, dinner provided by Max Pigskin Diner, and four drink tickets. Golfer tee gifts are in an embroidered keepsake tuna towel and a toasted tuna beer pilsner. Raffle items include a PGA Tour golf bag embroidered with the McIlroy Memorial Tournament logo. McIlroy Memorial Golf Outing Steering Committee, members led by Honorary Chair Joel Fletcher, are Matt Beck, Dwayne Chandler, Julie Curry, Pat Dawson, Arvin Donley, Ann Harshman, Terry Lovecamp, Doug McCarthy, Pat McIlroy, Tim McIlroy, Kurt Turtle Rogers, John Skeffington, Dave Weber, and Matt Whitehead. For team registration and sponsorship opportunities, contact Natalie Beck at natalie.beck@decateryMCAA.org or 217-872-3825, extension 129. That's 872-3835, extension 129. People speak in letters to the editor. BBB warns public about misleading and potentially dishonest charity raffles that may not award prizes as expected. Hundreds of nonprofit organizations across Illinois are facing tremendous financial pressure, due in part to the lack of money from the state government. As the budget impasse drags on for nearly 9 months, some nonprofits are considering raffles to generate needed revenue. Raffles have been a common fundraising technique for many years, explains Steve J. Burness, president and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Chicago and Northern Illinois. However, people need to be aware of the rules and requirements if they truly wish to be involved and have a desire for a prize. Ticket prices for charity raffles can be as little as $1 or as high as hundreds of dollars, noted Burness. The reason for participating in a raffle reasons vary. Some people simply use it as a form of donation and winning any prize is purely secondary. Others truly desire a specific prize. Whatever the reason for participating in the raffle, consumers should carefully read the rules to know the requirements and odds of winning. Burness noted that one raffle issue consumers should be especially attentive about is whether all prizes will be awarded or if the awards are based upon the number of tickets sold. While charities want to sell as many tickets as possible, they should make sure that the public is not misled or deceived. Charities should consider it their obligation to be honest and transparent, states Burness. In some cases, nonprofits enlist the help of celebrities to lend credibility and attract consumer attention. Celebrity endorsement should not be viewed as a guarantee that the raffle actually accomplishes what it says it will. The BBB offers great these tips for persons considering buying tickets for a charity raffle. Research the charity and its raffle before paying any money. Check the charity's BBB, Better Business Bureau, Charity Review at bbb.org/Chicago. Read all the rules and other information associated with the raffle. Ask whether the charity is using a professional fundraiser to assist the raffle and how much the ticket prices will actually go to the charity for its programs. Check that winners are selected and prizes awarded by checking the activity's website. If you are interested in ensuring that the charity gets the largest percentage of your money, it is best to make a direct contribution to avoid fundraising expenses. Residential Electronics Recycling Collection, April 2nd. There will be a free residential electronics recycling collection at Progress City USA on Saturday, April 2nd, from 9 a.m. until noon. Take your unwanted TVs, computers, laptops, printers, microwaves, video game consoles, phones, digital cameras, etc. to Progress City USA, adjacent to Richland Community College. Enter off East Mound Road and follow signs. There is a limit of 3 TVs/computer monitors per vehicle, with a total of 10 items per vehicle. Check www.macongreen.com. That's Macon as in Macon County. Or call Macon County Environmental Management Department at 425-4505. That's 425-4505 for additional items accepted. Residential electronics only. No items from business or commercial enterprises. This event is possible thanks to the support of the Advanced Technology Recycling, ATR, Macon County Environmental Management Department, and Progress City USA / Richland Community College. Journey of Caregiving for Your Loved One with Alzheimer's to be presented May 10th. Piatt County Nursing Home Foundation, Piatt County Nursing Home, and Faith in Action of Piatt County will be sponsoring the Journey of Caregiving for Your Loved One with Alzheimer's on Tuesday, May 10th. It will be held from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at First Christian Church, 1699 North State in Monticello. Betsy Broyles Arnold and her daughter Molly will be sharing the life lessons they learned in caring for Betsy's mother, who had Alzheimer's. Today, there are more than 5 million people living with Alzheimer's. As the disease progresses, as the disease progresses, loved ones struggle more and more with memory, thinking, and behavior. It is a journey that tests the limits of the human soul. Alzheimer's is a sort of helpless darkness that is emotional and all-consuming. Within this sadness, though, there exists a light. There are more than 15 million caregivers who lovingly care for their ailing loved ones. The task is immensely challenging, both emotionally and physically, but it is a job that arises out of love. Miss Arnold, daughter of Coach Frank Broyles, athletic director for Arkansas State Razorbacks, was devastated to learn that her mother, Barbara, had Alzheimer's. It was then that she became a caregiver for Barbara. It was through her journey that Betsy experienced learning and love on a level that few people will ever know. Caring for her mother was both a struggle and a huge learning experience. She wished that there was a manual on how to give the care on Alzheimer's and Alzheimer's patients needed. It was only after her mother's death that Coach Broyles approached his daughter with the idea of writing a book using the knowledge the family had acquired through their own experience. The book is entitled Coach Broyles' Playbook for Alzheimer's Caregivers. Currently, 850,000 books have been distributed. Caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease requires an intense level of dedication and unconditional love. Betsy states, when you have lived through it, you naturally want to help others. Betsy went on to say, everyone has compassion, but when that compassion turns into passion, it propels action. It is truly her passion to help others. A light brunch will be served and on-site respite care available. This free event is open to the public. However, pre-registration is required by phoning 217-762-7575. That's 762-7575. Here's more from Osborne Online. Has Decatur been visited from outer space? Remember one of our letters to the editor in the February 3rd edition about a strange occurrence? Frank D. Cummins of Decatur wrote an incident in his life that happened in Macon County on February 4th, 1960. Here's part of that letter to refresh your memory. I had just crossed a small bridge, and I guess I'd gone approximately half a mile. All of a sudden, the whole earth became broad daylight. It was like it was noon, not midnight. I stopped my truck but left the engine running. I got out of the truck, kept one foot on the running board and the other on the ground. I looked up and saw a giant bright light, which I would say was probably 60 to 80 feet in diameter. I would say it was possibly 1,000 feet high. It could have been higher, I just don't know. As I stood there, I remember I could see both sides of the road, which had small tree lines. The bottom of the light looked totally flat. It did not look convex, nor was it concave. I could hear the hum of something like a giant turbine. It was slow and soft and turning gently. I kept looking up, wondering if this was the end of the world. I don't know how long the entire encounter took place. maybe 2 to 3 minutes or 35 to 45 seconds. I do remember standing there shaking like a dog passing peach seeds. I remember to get decided to get in my truck to see if it would go. The minute I started to move, it was gone and everything was pitch black again. Then I started thinking about flying saucers. That is what they were called back then. Frank's experience has generated another letter from Randy Janes of Mount Zion. Randy wrote that the February 3rd letter has prompted me to relate something that happened to me in about 1966 or 67. I was in the den of our house in the Fansfield neighborhood with my mother one night watching the television when something strange occurred. I had a new Webcor tape recorder that, when you set it up to record, it had the bass turned down and put a microphone too close to the speakers. It would put on a low noise that would make the room seem to vibrate. We experienced such a noise and vibration that seemed to shake the whole house, and it was coming from right behind us. We were seated on a couch on the north wall with a window right behind us, and we looked at one another and said nothing, not wanting to look out the window. The next morning, we discovered several equally spaced burnt patches on the yard just outside the window. If someone had a huge drone you landed in our yard that night, please contact me. I heard a story from one of my customers several years ago, who lives just outside Argenta, about seeing what appeared to be headlights of someone driving across a field behind their home. They soon realized that the lights were steady and not bouncing up and down, as they would be driving across rough terrain. The approaching lights suddenly sped up and then vanished. Okay, I'm convinced that we are not alone in this universe. Frank and Randy's letters detailing their experiences a half century ago show that whatever they experienced, it left such an impression on them. All these decades later, they remembered every detail. Even though I've never seen a flying saucer or a UFO, I don't doubt the stories of Frank and Randy and their letters to me. Whatever they experienced is obviously burned into their minds forever. It seems that flying saucers, UFOs, and other strange happenings started in the mid-1940s and continued into the 1960s, but have somewhat faded from the public view in the decades since. There's been some photographs and videos shot of flying saucers and UFOs that some have been ex but some have been exposed as fakes. I try to keep an open mind, and I do find experience related by Frank and Randy fascinating to read. In the past, some have claimed that visitors from another part of our solar system came to Earth looking for intelligent life and didn't find any. If you believe that theory, you also have to believe they came during a presidential election year. And local news in the Decatur Tribune. Poet Steve Davenport will read from his work at Richland Community College event. Poet Steve Davenport will read from his work on Tuesday, April 19th at 7 p.m. in W126 at Richland Community College, an event sponsored by Student Engagement and the Liberal Arts Division. A product of American Bottom, an Illinois floodplain across the Mississippi from St. Louis, Steve Davenport is the author of two poetry collections, Overpass 2012, Overpass, sorry, that was published in 2012, and Uncontainable Noise in 2006. With his wildly energetic and funny poetry, Davenport brings to life a rough-and-tumble working-class world that will be hauntingly familiar and immediately accessible to Richland students and the Decatur community. His poems and stories and essays have been anthologized, reprinted, and published in scores of literary magazines, both online and in print. A Story of the Southern Review received a 2011 Pushcart Prize special mention. His Murder on Gasoline Lake, published in Black Warrior Review and later as a chapbook, is listed as notable in Best American Essays 2007. His scholarship includes essays about the Beat Generation, Jack Kerouac, and Richard Hugo. Recently, he's involved in songwriting projects. One example is Art Box Collective's Honey and Glue. Another is the collaborative work he's done with Bruiser Rumeni on The Noise in My Blood, a CD of 7 songs. He is the associate director of the Creative Writing Program at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. For more information and samples of Davenport's work, see his website at http://gasolinelake.com/. Representative Scheer to host Senior Spelling Bee for Senior Citizens on March 22nd. Promoting Continuous Learning, State Representative Sue Scheer, Decatur, Democrat, will be hosting a spelling bee for senior citizens at McKinley Court in Decatur beginning at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, March 22nd. The Senior Spelling Bee is a great way for older adults to celebrate many years of learning as well as stay mentally active, says Scheer. Plus, it can be fun for seniors to reflect on their school days. Scheer's Spelling Bee at McKinley Court on March 22nd is part of the Association of Illinois Senior Centers and the Illinois Department of Aging's Illinois State Senior Spelling Bee Competition. This year marks the third time Scheer has hosted one, and last year's winner was Helen Clark of Decatur. The event is free and open to members of the public age 50 and older. McKinley Court Care Center is at 500 West McKinley Avenue in Decatur. Besides giving seniors a chance to demonstrate their spelling abilities, this event also provides an opportunity for older folks to interact with each other through fun and friendly competition, said Scheer. It's gratifying to bring seniors together to share their lifelong love of learning. To register for the Spelling Bee, please contact Scheer's Constituent Service Office at 217-877-9636. That's 877-9636. Scheer represents the 96th District, which includes portions of Christian, Macon, and Sangamon counties. Golden K. Kiwanis to hold Flapjack Fundraiser at Applebee's April 9th. Decatur Golden K. Kiwanis will be having a Flapjack Fundraiser event at Applebee's in Forsyth on Saturday, April 9th, 2016. Money raised from this event will be used toward continuing to support children's programs in our area. Pancakes, bacon, coffee, juice will be served from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tickets are $5 and can be purchased from any Decatur Golden K member or call 521-6195. That's 521-6195. Limited tickets will be available at the door. And now for letters to the editor. Disturbed by content of Theater 7's Avenue Q. Dear editor, to all the people of this community and surrounding communities, I'm writing this to inform you that the musical Avenue Q, which Theater 7 is presenting in April, is a filthy musical. They are not telling the public that. Even the music has the F word, D word, and sexually motivated words in them. One director said, "There is a possibility that a pair of puppets have sex in one scene." When asked why they were doing such filth, their answer was appalling. Our attendance is down and our membership is down, so we are hoping Avenue Q will bring those numbers up. What I am hearing is that filth and trash are going to make them successful. Later, a man who'd been in several performances said, "If we don't have the F word, D word, sex and nudity, the young people won't come." Is this what we as adults are teaching our young people in this community? God help us if it is. The success of any organization, corporation, company, or business begins with good, strong leadership. Then, in order to bring that project or task to successful completion, it is necessary to have the cooperation of all members and all employees working together in order to be successful. Signed, Marcella L. Hahn, Decatur. That's all we have time for in the first half hour of the Decatur Area Papers. We'll take a short break and return with the second half. And I'll read some from the Decatur Herald and Review. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.